Folks, if you love Mega like we think you do, do us a small favor. Join the Patreon. It's the number one way to support a small podcast like ours. The year we had was, well, I wouldn't say we didn't get our asses kicked with strikes and podcasting budgets getting slashed. So why not just head over and give it a try? You can do a free trial on Patreon. If that's not in your plan, at the very least, share your favorite episode of Mega with a friend and leave us a review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast. We'd love to keep going, and we can't do it without you. Thanks. I'm not sure if I mentioned it before, but when my friend Clay Mason Bannerman and I want to impress our new lady friends, Tiffer and Mickey, we don't even have to take them to a restaurant. That's because we have an entire freezer stocked full of ButcherBox, and that includes high-quality meat and seafood that we can trust. It's so convenient. It's delivered right to our doorstep, and there's always free shipping. I mean, where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Tiffer and Mickey love it, and so will you. At least one of them is always around asking when the new ButcherBox is arriving. Sign up at butcherbox.com/mega and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/mega and use code MEGA to choose your free for a year offer plus $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mega is an improvised satire from the staff of a fictional megachurch.
We are here. Lord, we are here. And we're ready. To podcast.
Hiya. I am so excited to share today's episode with you because we have a very special guest named Brian McLaren, who I've been a fan of for a really long time, and he is an author, a speaker, an activist, and a public theologian, and an all-around really lovely human being who has great insight, and he is a very generous artist, and he shares truth with us. And Gray, I'll let you explain yourself in a minute, but I just wanted to thank him for coming on and say what a sport he was to play himself going up against a couple of real ding-dong characters. And I'm really excited to share it with you because I think it's a great conversation.
Yeah, I felt sad that I had to play Gray the whole time. So sorry about that, Brian. One other little reminder is the Rise and Fall of Twin Hills will pick up again next week. Two more episodes. That's our new mini series, a mockumentary true crime podcast inside the world of Twin Hills. If you're new to the podcast, go back and listen to episode 1, 2, and 3. I think it's a nice way to get an introduction to Mega. And of course, if you've been listening to Mega for a while and haven't listened to that yet, please, please, please go check it out and tell a friend about it, because word of mouth is our best friend.
This is your time. Go get caught up on episode 1, 2, 3, because there's only 2 left and they're gonna be good.
And now here is Brian McLaren.
Well, just like Jesus welcomed Thomas to put his fingers in the nail holes, our guest today welcomes Christians to ask questions, and we've got some questions for him. It's my pleasure to introduce your friend and mine, Brian McLaren. Welcome to the program, my friend. How you feeling today?
I am too awake to be forsaken. How's that?
Is great, Brian. Well,
it's okay to be awake, but it's not okay to be woke, okay? You don't want to be too woke, you'll be broke. But if you're awake, it's time to bake or whatever. Here we go.
I should tell you, I live in Florida, so I am very woke down here, and it's not a popular thing.
Oh,
so
really?
Okay.
Florida, you got a great governor, and Disney has been so good up till recently, but at least you got some sunshine.
We do have sunshine, and Yeah, I saw a bumper sticker the other day that said "Free DeSantistan."
Free DeSantistan.
You can think about that.
That is really clever. I think I'm going to have to think about that one for a while. Free DeSantistan. Okay, I just want to make America Florida again, if you know what I mean. And one thing I want to talk to you about, Brian, is you are an author. Looking at your bio here that I Googled on the internet, it says that you were a former college English teacher, and then you were a pastor for 24 years. Congratulations. And now you're an author, an activist, not sure about that, public theologian, and frequent guest lecturer at gatherings in the U.S. and internationally, and that your work has appeared all over the place, Time Magazine, Newsweek, USA Today, that's an awesome one, New York Times, sorry about that. But I wanted to start off by asking you, what is it that you're up to with this book that you've written that's called Do I Stay Christian? Because I haven't read it, but just that title, Do I Stay Christian? A Guide for the Doubters, the Disappointed, and the Disillusioned. I cracked it open, and when I saw that it wasn't just one page that said yes, I closed it, and I was like, well, I guess I'll ask him about what this book is all about. So could you tell us a little bit about this book?
Sure, Gray. I should first tell you that you are one of the very few interviewers who is honest enough to say you haven't read the book. So I really appreciate that. There's so many who it's very obvious they haven't, and you told me the truth. So that's great.
Oh, thank you.
So, Gray, I would think for you as a youth worker, you have a lot of students who, as part of their normal growing up, they start to question what adults told them. They begin to see problems with it, holes in it, wrinkles in it, inconsistencies. And one thing leads to another. An awful lot of people, not everybody, but an awful lot of people, especially younger people, begin to ask questions about the faith they inherited. And they start to wonder, do I stay Christian? You might really be surprised to hear this, but as you said, I was a pastor for 24 years, so I know a lot of pastors. And there are an awful lot of pastors who 5 or 10 or 20 years into their pastoral work, they start to see real problems in the Christian faith, and they start to wonder if it's something they really want to stay with. So I wanted to write a book that would help people ask and answer that question in a way that was honest and, yeah, a way that I hope would be helpful.
That's
okay,
so cool.
Yeah,
that's so cool. And you're right. It happens to the best of them. And like I said, Jesus is not afraid of our doubts at all because, you know, his grace is sufficient. And I'll tell you what, I've heard that even Billy Graham, at the very top of the pastor pyramid sat Billy Graham, and he even had a dark night of the soul, and that he even questioned at one point, what was it all for? Where was it going? Was it serving him or whatnot? And you know what? Whatever it was, capitalism or something, rushed in, nudged him back into the fold. And I do think that that is why we've got God on our money. I know that he chose the people of Israel originally, but now I think he's really shifted his focus and he's kind of like, well, now it's sort of the United States. We're his chosen people. And I really do appreciate things like Jesus really being into democracy, capitalism, and all those things that will just keep people in line when they do doubt. You know, we have plenty of room for doubt, and we have plenty of things that'll nudge you right back in if you end up being the one little lamb that's out, you know, I don't know, sniffing around a liberal college campus or something.
Well, I must say, Hallie, you really gave me a big word basket of a lot of words there, and you packed an awful lot in there, some of which I might be able to agree with, and some of which it would be a little harder, but I agree with your main point. I do think that if Jesus were sitting with an awful lot of people today who are doubting and asking questions, honest questions, I think he'd be way happier with honest doubts and questions than with an awful lot of the fake piety that goes along today. You know, it's really one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of your son, Day. I think he's that kind of a person.
Oh,
he's a bit much.
Day. Oh, I'm so glad you're friends with Day. I do think
crazy,
that only Jesus could love him, really. Jesus and McLaren, I guess. But, you know, we'll get through the teenage years.
Now, Brian, I did want to say, and this is not a critique, it's more of a suggestion in the form of a critique, but if I was to write the book, Do I Stay Christian, did you ever think about just making it a multiple choice that no matter what they answered,
awesome.
At the end, it just says yes?
You know, I never, ever thought of that.
Oh, really?
If I were writing it on Twitter, that's maybe that would have been an option, but I had a few other goals in mind and a slightly longer word count than that. But I can see why you would want to set it up that way.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Because I really value truth, misinformation really, really scares me. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that dismantles New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis. At their best, they attack public health efforts in times of crisis, and at their worst, it's like they're recruiting for the fever dream of QAnon. On Conspirituality, you will have a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic all discussing stories and cult dynamics and helping educate us and using proven science as their guiding light. I really recommend the Jordan Klepper episode talking about creating comedy in the MAGAverse. Jordan's incredible. And I also really love the Medical Medium episode. It's really good, and not just because I've had my own weird experiences with mediums. From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality Podcast will help you stay informed against misinformation and resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why did you stop being a pastor? Was it just because you yourself were kind of, and I hate to say it like this, but you know, a lot of people, and I'm going off of Reddit mostly, called you sort of the wild man of Christianity, the party animal of piety, the Christian version of, you know, the Rolling Stones or whatever. And when I look up some of these memes and stuff about you, I mean, it really seems like you're a bit of a wild man, and perhaps we're going to just tear your church apart. Was that kind of why you had to leave, or why they forced you out?
Actually, I'll tell you, I was so fortunate when I was a pastor. I'll tell you a quick story about this, Gray. I was at a point where I was asking a lot of questions myself as a pastor.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
You know, it's funny when you preach from the Bible week after week, and you actually have to read through long parts of the Bible, like I would preach through the whole book of Exodus, and I would see all kinds of things that just didn't make sense to me. And I would say, why is this repeated? And why is this told one way in Exodus and in a slightly different way in Deuteronomy? And so I would start to notice these things, and it really got me asking a lot of questions. And I told people in my congregation, in my sermons, I'd say sometimes, I don't know about this, or I used to think this, I don't know what I think anymore about this. And I was worried that I'd have people get upset and maybe try to force me out. But one night, I had one of the leaders of my little church team, leadership team, pulled me aside and he said, Brian, we have to decide if this journey that you're on of asking questions and rethinking your faith, is this just your journey or is it our journey too as a congregation? And he basically said, I think it's all of our journey. And so he brought this up to our larger leadership team. And to my surprise, sure, there were some people who left and weren't happy about it. But once people were given permission to ask their questions, it turned out that just about everybody was really asking some questions about about what they'd inherited and what the norms were. And so I was very fortunate. I was in a situation where I could be remarkably honest.
Wow.
And was this in California or something? Because at least here at Twin Hills, we've got 10,000 members. And as far as I know, no one has had really any serious doubts yet. So maybe we're really doing something right.
Maybe. It also could be that people come to your church for other reasons than honesty.
Oh, yeah. Well, we do have a lazy river.
Yeah, sure. That could be it. And it also could be that a kind of vibe or feeling is given off by what happens at your church, where people know once they enter the doors, there are certain things they don't talk about.
Yeah.
And they have to either deal with those things in private and in secret, or they have to find some little group of friends, just maybe even two or three people that they can open their hearts to, you know?
I get it. I mean, my son Day is always saying word salad gobbledygook stuff, like he talks about things that, I think he's making up these words. He talks about things like, it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility. I'm like, get me a dictionary or you know, more word salads, like blind devotion is comfortable and liberation is painful. And, you know, maybe that last one kind of speaks to why your church stayed nice and tight-knit and asked questions and everything, but didn't become a mega church. That's probably why right there.
You know, I think, Hallie, if what a pastor wants to do is become a mega church, the thing he has to do is he has to tell people what they want to hear. Otherwise, they won't come.
Yeah.
And he has to make sure that all the bad people are the people outside,
yeah,
so that all the people inside feel constantly affirmed.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the really effective, promising ways to build a mega church. It has a number of downsides that you all probably experience from time to time, but yeah, people make their choices about what kind of community they want to build.
It's true. I mean, even Joel Osteen had a downside with thousands of dollars in the bathroom walls. I mean, these people will do anything to bring down a good man of God.
I mean, and that's a feature, not a bug, I think, of some of these really successful churches. If you can put money in the walls, you're probably doing something right in my mind.
You know, let me ask you a question. I'm just curious. Put yourself just in your imagination. I know you're from Australia, but imagine if you had lived in the United States back in, let's say, the 1830s or the 1840s.
Ooh, okay.
When slavery was the norm in the country. Do you think, obviously, to build a mega church then, you probably would have either had to affirm slavery or just never talk about it? What do you think would have happened if people would have said, hey, what we're doing here is wrong?
You know, Brian, and I knew this was going to happen, that you were going to get political. And a lot of people warned me about this, mostly in the comments of your Amazon reviews, because what I did first is I went and I looked at all the one-star reviews, which unfortunately, for those listening, there are quite a few. And the ones who really nailed it on the head said, politically motivated, politically motivated, politically motivated. You know, and people come after me a lot, and I'm going to try to answer this with a lot of grace. And I guess what I would say is, what was your question?
So, great. I just was asking, if you were alive, don't think of this as a political question. Think of it as like an honest moral question.
Okay. Like at the beginning of an ethics class, like an ethics question?
Oh, who wants that, Allie?
Well, you know, the kind of question that Jesus would ask when he'd say things like, what would it profit a person to gain the whole world and lose their soul? Ooh. Like, how would you feel about having a mega church in the time of slavery where it was a mostly white congregation and they never, ever even mentioned the reality of slavery? Or they defended it, because, you know, you could use a lot of Bible verses to do that. So I'm just trying to get you to imagine what you would have done if you were back there.
Well,
back
you know, Brian, when I really think about what I would have done, because, you know, I'm pretty young. And so it's hard for me to kind of go back to these times when you, maybe you were a kid. and so when I think about that, that's a bit far back for me to go. But I guess what I would say is, yes, you know, I do realize that there were some bad things that maybe happened in America. But if we could just keep it positive, and I think that's a lot of the critique around the stuff that you're talking about is people are going, oh, that's a bit sad. That's a bit bummer. Yeah. I don't really want to think about that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I can totally see that. And I can totally see why you would feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, if I may ask, because I'm trying to put myself in the shoes, and it's very hard because, you know, being a lady and everything, I just probably wouldn't have been in any of the history stories. But I'm trying to wrap my head around it because I was at Monticello one time and I thought it was so cool because Thomas Jefferson, he's on the Mount of Olives.
Did you mean Mount Rushmore instead of the Mount of Olives?
That's right.
I'm not exactly sure
about
that.
Okay, yeah, that's where he is. And he's on the $20 bill or one of the bills. And he was an inventor. He wrote the Constitution. He wrote all of the things. I do take issue with him writing a new version of the Bible that didn't have any of the supernaturalism in it. And I think the Bible says that you'll go straight to hell if you change the Bible. So, but he couldn't be because he was a white Christian man. But there are so many contradictions, but tricky things in the Bible. It does have things about slavery and stuff. And when my kids ask about that, when we're driving in the car, I mostly just, you know, say that the engine light went on and I pull into a Pep Boy and jump out of the car so as not to have to answer it. How do you look at the Bible like that?
Oh, man. Well, the first thing I want to say, Hallie, is you are the kind of person who in 5 or 10 years might want to pick up my book, Do I Stay Christian?
Okay.
You're probably not interested in it right now, but some years down the road, especially if your kids keep asking you those questions, you might want to stay out of the car with them because those questions will probably keep coming.
Oh.
Gray, I doubt you'll ever really be interested in the book.
No, I'm not now, and I probably won't be either. Yeah.
So that's okay. But for people who start asking those kinds of questions, they need a safe place,
yeah,
you know, to ask them. And I'll tell you how this started for me. It really started when I was about Day's age, really, a little younger than him. I really loved science. I'm one of those guys, when I was a kid, I loved to learn about dinosaurs and stars and planets and animals and plants. And I just loved science. I read all the books in the library about science. And evolution made so much sense to me from like 8, 10, 12 years old. And when I read the book of Genesis, I just thought, this is beautiful poetry. Back in the ancient times, people had no way of knowing about evolution. And I saw the beauty of the poetry. And I just appreciated it as poetry. And then I had a Sunday school teacher who told me, no, I had to interpret Genesis 1 literally. And I remember just thinking, okay, I'm 14 years old. 4 years from now, I am so out of here. Because it just was obvious to me that that was unnecessary to have to interpret that literally. So I suppose what happened, Hallie, is that I gave myself permission to think my own thoughts and not have to believe what somebody told me.
Really? And what did your parents think about that?
You know, my parents gave me a book that was supposed to tell me that evolution was of the devil and that Genesis was literal and all kinds of ways to explain away the dinosaurs. And I read the book and I told them, this makes no sense to me. And I think they basically, my parents were really wonderful people. And I think what they said is, I'd rather keep a relationship with my son than try to make him agree with me about everything. And I think that was a very loving and wise decision on their part.
Wow.
You know, I wonder if they tried to give you, and I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but in Australia, we had a great book. It was called Dino Demon by Dr. Gene Paplinger. And it was really cool because at different points, Jesus would show up and kind of round up the dinosaurs like he was a cowboy of the dinosaurs. And sort of the idea that Jesus could go back in time and kind of make these beasts behave. And that was something that I really enjoyed as a young person. I wish they had given you that book instead of, you know, know, whatever Buddhist book or something that you felt found yourself reading.
Well, Brian, if I may ask, because my kids have said that to me before, of like, Mom, why is it that you don't have curiosity about who we are? You only want to replicate yourself inside of us. And that very question made me feel so quivery and shaky and destabilized inside that I just grounded them and took away their iPhones. So what should I have said?
Well, first of all, I want to say, Hallie, the fact that you felt quivery inside tells me that you felt a lot of tension. And I'd like to make a guess about the tension that you felt. Oh. And I might be wrong, but something for you to think about. My guess would be that at that moment, you felt the honesty of your children, who you really love.
Yes, I love them.
But you were aware that if you gave them the space to follow their honesty, that then people in your church would look at you and say, you're not a very good Christian mother, and you're not bringing up your children the way, you're not making a replica of yourself. And that put you in tension of what a social group that means so much to you, your church, would say if you were loyal to your children. Yeah. And your church put you in a position where you had to choose between loyalty to your church and loyalty to your children. And that was a really tough moment for you. And in that instant, you probably couldn't think all those thoughts, but I bet on some deep level, that's what you felt.
Well, it could have also been, Hallie, that you ate too much fettuccine Alfredo, which also gives you that similar feeling, doesn't it?
That's true. That's true. And I do worry because I don't want them to get gobbled up by the evils of the world. I care about them, and I know that this is the best way to live and that their skulls aren't completely hardened yet.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
When you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, you get a belly full of laughs and a head full of real information. Our gallimaufry of expert guests answer questions on stuff adults need to know. I have mold in my dwelling. What do I do? What's gerrymandering? What happens chemically when I fall in love? How do I handle a parent-teacher conference? What are microbes? Listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Solve problems, get laughs.
You, because you said, you know, you've pored over Exodus and things like that. And I do my walk through the Bible program every single year so that every year I read the Bible from cover to cover, Old Testament passages combined with New Testament every day in my devotions so that I'm staying up on my Bible knowledge and staying in the Word. But, you know, sometimes I have questions that aren't answered in my walk through the Bible commentaries. And I was wondering, maybe you know, because maybe it's okay to ask you this. This is something I think about a lot lately. What do you think was Jesus's human experience of the crucifixion, that day and that lead up to that, you know, thing that he had to do for redemption for all humankind? Was he thinking that, because when I read it, I'm like, what did he think was happening? Because it seems like we've now got the idea of what was happening, but it doesn't seem like that was his what did he think was going on?
Well, Hallie, it sounds to me like when you're reading the Bible, you're actually trying to take it seriously. You're not just saying, what do other people say about this? You're thinking about it yourself. That's what got me where I am today. I ask those kind of questions too.
Okay.
And I think that that is actually a beautiful thing because it can cause some stress,
yeah.
But because you'll be maybe a little bit out of sync with a lot of the people around you. But I think when you ask, what did Jesus experience? It would make you notice something, like in the story in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah.
He says, if this cup can be taken away from me, let it be so. And if not, your will be done. It sounds like Jesus didn't exactly know why he was going to have to go through this himself. Let me say it this way. It sure doesn't sound like somebody who had the future all figured out, who otherwise, why would he be afraid? And why would he ask if the cup could be taken away from him? Right?
No, Brian, yeah. I'm sorry, guys. I got to jump in here and just give a little bit of corrective guidance. Because really, if you're thinking, first off, I think Jesus was thinking, hey, I'm going to be crucified. That's awesome. And I think the second thing that you could think about, Brian, is you sort of said it in this way, like, you know, if this cup could be taken away from me, like he's sort of asking a question. But what that was, Brian, is it was kind of a rhetorical question because I have an Uncle Nevis that he was a terrible drunk. And one time, you know, he would be at a party and he'd be holding a cup and he'd go, if anybody wants to try to take this cup from me, you know, go ahead and try to do it. And people would. And he actually put several of my cousins in the hospital because they would play a game where they'd try to grab the cup out of his hand and he would sort of knock them over the head. And so that's kind of what I'm thinking. Jesus is going, hey, if anybody can try to take this from me, you know, let it be done. I think he's going, you know, touche, challenge, game on. And then, you know, we all know how the rest goes.
You know, all I can say, Gray, is that if Steve ever loses his job, you might make a move for the pulpit because with stories like that, you might be able to add a few more thousand people to the mega church. Certain people really like that kind of stuff. But can I just say that even if you don't think Jesus was asking a question there in the garden, you do have to remember the question he asked on the cross himself. That's a pretty intense question that says something about his human experience too.
Do you think he was thinking that God would stop it? And so when he said, why have you forsaken me? It was because the capital punishment was going through.
That's it. Boy, it's interesting you bring up capital punishment, isn't it? Because they're here at the center of the gospel story is a capital punishment that was criminal and wrong and evil. And the innocent people get killed an awful lot. It's really interesting that you use that word, Hallie. You know, I think Jesus was a human being. And on that cross, it felt like everything he ever stood for had lost. And the violence and political corruption and religious corruption had won. And I think that felt like being abandoned. And I think that is something a lot of us feel at times, that everything that we think is good gets defeated and everything that seems cheap and wrong and vicious and hateful wins. So yeah, I think he felt that in that moment.
Yeah,
I felt that once. I did, Allie.
What?
I was in CrossFit Regionals 3 years ago. I'm not sure if you remember this, but right when I went to Clean Jerk 350, they disqualified me for a foot fault.
Oh.
And I had I'm not going to compare it to capital punishment, but I was definitely wrongly accused.
Oh, that is such a shame. But I just think, you know, Brian, and I feel like you're the only person I could really say this to, and I'll probably cut it out later, but when I read it, I know I have all my ideas now that I've learned of orthodoxy and indoctrination and all of that, that this was the redemptive power of the blood on the cross and that, you know, sin requires a blood sacrifice for forgiveness and that this works for all mankind. And it shoots both ways, past, present, and future. Everyone kind of gets washed in the blood. But when you look at what he was doing that day, it seemed like he just was a disruptor teacher who made the state angry, who was convicted and being killed by the state and kind of begging for it not to happen. And
I look at Navalny, this Russian guy, right, who says, I'm just one person, and if I gotta die, he's interesting to me because he doesn't seem to be taking it too precious. He's like, I'm one life if I have to die for all this other people. And even Navalny, who's a Russian, seems to be chiller than Jesus about it. And so I don't understand that at all. I wonder, that's what made me think maybe Jesus didn't know that he was Navalny-ing it. And that's something we put on later.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know this, Hallie, but that little word basket of theological explanation you just packed in there about Jesus' blood and paying for sin and all the rest, you know, that was not a belief in the Christian church for the first 1,000 years of Christianity. That's
what?
Not really how they understood things.
What? So, how did they understand things?
It's a really interesting story if you want me to go into it.
Well,
but
you can, we'll probably cut it. You can go ahead.
A very short version of it would be the first way that people understood Jesus' death was called the ransom or fishhook theory. And their idea was that the devil owned humanity, and the devil went to God and sort of said, hey, let's make a deal. You let me kill Jesus, and I'll let all the people go free. So it wasn't God killing Jesus. It was the devil killing Jesus. And they called it the fishhook theory because the devil got Jesus' body and put it on a cross, but then God raised it from the dead, and Jesus won, and the devil lost. And it was this whole turnaround and trickery of the devil. So a very different understanding of what the cross did in the first couple centuries. And then some of the theologians thought, gosh, that makes the devil sound like he has a lot of power. And then they came up with another theory. They called it the Christus Victor theory. And that was a theory that Jesus didn't defeat. It wasn't specifically the devil. It was death that Jesus was defeating. And death was sort of turned into almost an image, and they treated death in an anthropomorphic way. And in fact, you could go to Europe today, and on some of the ancient art sculpted into a doorway of an old church, or even in rock in some of the old church buildings, you would see pictures of death as this giant monster swallowing people. And the devil got relegated to being this, he was down in the stomach of the monster of death, you know, dipping people into vats of hot oil and things like that. But it's death that's the enemy. And then later on, this guy named Saint Anselm came up with a theory that you have been taught as if it's the only theory that was ever believed, and that it's even taught as if it's the gospel itself. It's just a theory that came along later in Christian history.
Whoa.
Okay, that's really just, you know, I just want to point out that word theory, right, Hallie? Because there's a lot of theories floating
that's
around.
That's so true.
And kind of the internet is kind of full of theories, and it kind of sounds to me like Brian's one of those guys who gets in the chat rooms, and he's kind of going around with these people in the chat room going, you know, what about this? What about this? And then you kind of get yourself a bit confused, don't you?
Well, it didn't sound like a theory to me. It sounded like a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, honestly. You got monsters in bellies. I mean, if I told my kids this, they'd love it. They'd get a 20-sided die and start being like, maybe the Bible's interesting. I don't know. I'll tell you what, Brian. I know that you've been accused by Orthodoxy Christians as being kind of liberal leaning or falling off the tracks and all that. But I was wondering if technically, because of theology and the way that the Bible works, not to reduce your book, Do I Stay Christian, too much down to oversimplifying it, but I just wonder if, because of predestination, it doesn't matter what Brian McLaren comes to believe or evolves into, because he was once saved. And so, you know what? No matter what he does, he's always going to be saved. Is that true?
Oh, my goodness. You know, when people say I'm a little liberal, Hallie, it's so much worse than that. It's so much worse than that, because I think that whole way of thinking that everything is about going to heaven and hell, I don't think that's the point of the Bible. I don't think that was really the point of Jesus. It has been the point of some forms of Christianity. That's not the kind of Christian I want to be, you know. So I understand. And I was that kind of Christian for many years because it's what I was taught. And really, like both of you, I wanted to be loyal. I wanted to be good. And so I tried to follow what people expected and taught me. I tried my best, couldn't stick with it. And I had to find my own way forward.
Well, I hate to break into sort of the gotcha journalism mode, but, you know, this kind of confirms my theory, Brian, which was I did a bit of Googling about you, again, you know, mostly on the Amazon review, one-star kind of comment section. And one of the things people did say is that, are you familiar with the Doobie Brothers song, Jesus Is Just All Right?
Yes, I remember that song.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Well, some people there said that you have a tattoo on your back that says Jesus is just all right. And in the way that tattoo is phrased is you're going, he's just all right. He's just a guy. And, you know, that's where I'm going down an internet rabbit hole going, I can kind of see that. He seems like the kind of guy that is probably out here just going, well, you know, Jesus isn't perfect. He's just all right.
Well, first of all, just to set your mind at ease, I don't have any tattoos, not a single one. So, let me just say, it really makes sense to me that you read the one-star reviews because those folks like you have almost never read my book. So I can see why you would have been drawn.
Okay. Well, just, you know, I do want to keep this fair and balanced.
I've heard those words before.
And if I may offer you a word basket of encouragement, Brian, it's that I think you grew up on the East Coast and they're a slippery slope out there. I think, you know, you got New York City, it's the coastal elite. And, you know, they start thinking and using critical judgment and education, and it grieves the heart of God, honestly. So I just want to say, in the same way my son Dave says that, you know, racism isn't his fault, but it's his responsibility, which I still have to somehow have someone interpret that for me. But in the same way, I it's not your fault, Brian. You were in garbage, out garbage. And, you know, you were just around so many of these free thinkers. I think on the coasts, it's very hard to get to God from the coasts. It's, you know, easier than a man to get through the eye of a needle or some such.
What do you think started that whole thing, Brian, where you're thinking like this? What kind of books were you reading?
It might have been that his parents told him they'd love him no matter what.
I'm just telling you, Dino Demons, really good book. You should check it out.
Oh, okay. I'll put it on my list. Oh, Brian, here's what I wanted to ask you is, you know how the Navy SEALs put on those night vision goggles and then they can kill Saddam Hussein in the dark? Well, if you had on your love goggles, let's say, that allows you to see truth and love and that version of Christianity that you would still subscribe to, what is it that you see through those goggles?
That's a great question. Because as you know, you may know, maybe you don't, Hallie, but I have a podcast too. It's called Learning How to See. So that question about seeing really kind of resonates with me. You know, I should tell you that when I was a teenager, I had this very powerful spiritual experience. It was right when I was having all these doubts and questions. And I won't go into the whole story of this experience, except to say that what I felt one night is that the most real thing in the universe was love, and that whatever God is about love. And not only did God love me, but God loved the trees and the grass and the water and the stars and every single human being, whatever their politics, whatever their religion. And that has just kind of shaped my life. It's just been, and what ends up happening then is everything looks different. When you start with the idea that God is all good and God is all love, it makes everything look different. So that to me is that's like the question that goes right to the heart of things.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I guess I can agree with that. And then also that Jesus was, you know, definitely awesome.
He was ripped.
Definitely.
He could have done CrossFit. I bet how many pull-ups do you think Jesus could do?
Well, I think he showed us, Hallie. Brian, I do want to ask you, what do you think, if you had any criticisms of sort of modern day Christianity or the American church, do you have any criticisms of it?
Mm. So to me, the story of America is a heartbreaking story. It's people, for example, when you tell the story of the pilgrims leaving England, where they were this group called separatists, and they were being persecuted by the Church of England. And so they came, and so here they were persecuted by Christians, and then they came to the United States, and they, what did they do? They ended up stealing the lands of the Native Americans, and they ended up persecuting them.
Oh, really?
And this is what so often happens. People get abused, people get harmed, people get hurt. And then they go and they end up hurting other people. There's an old saying, hurt people, hurt people.
Yeah.
And so, and then what happens is that then in some ways, our country that thinks it's so exceptional was involved in one of the most heinous and horrific things ever done in human history, in the enslavement of 11 to 13 million people of African descent who were kidnapped and brought across the Atlantic Ocean. And then, you know, the horrors of what that led to. And as you said before, Hallie, Thomas Jefferson had this very strange and tortured role in the middle of all that. And the Christian religion sat by as these things happened. The number of people, it was a tiny minority who stood up against these things and said this was wrong.
Huh.
And so when I look at Christianity in America, the Christianity I was brought up in, I realized that that history was hidden from me, and only the good stuff of our history was talked about, kind of like you were saying, Greg, because people wanted to stay positive.
Right. Yeah,
so everybody wanted to stay positive, and they didn't want to face reality. And so I look at American Christianity as a kind of sad story of, especially among white-dominated Christianity, as a sad story of people who've had the truth kept from them, and they've kind of gone along without ever getting to face their history. And if we would face it, I think that could lead to much better days.
Oh, well, thanks. I guess that is, so I guess not really any critique.
Brian, how important do you think labels are? Because I feel like now it's like, I'm Christian, he's not Christian, I'm gay, I'm straight, I'm a woman, I'm a man, I'm old, I'm young, I'm this, I'm that, I'm Republican, I'm Democrat. How important are labels? Like, because honestly, I've met now people who say I'm a Christian, but I'm afraid to use the word because so many people have bad connotations with it.
Oh, my goodness.
Are labels important?
Yeah, when you say that, Hallie, all I can think of is, remember Jesus' story of the Good Samaritan?
Yeah.
When he told that story and he said the word Samaritan, I can imagine everybody gasped, because that was the one label that all of the people listening to him would have hated.
Oh, really?
And so he tells a story with and uses a label that everybody would hate. And the person who has the bad label turns out to be the good person. In fact, he tells about some other guys with labels, a Levite and a priest. They have good labels, and they are heartless and uncompassionate. So it looks to me like Jesus is pretty big on flipping the script on those labels and trying to help us see that, we have to see people as beloved, whoever they are. And doesn't mean they're right, but it means that our love and respect for them isn't based on whether they've got the right label.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, okay, before I let you go, settle a bet in my household. My son Day is trying to tell me that if I'm using the Bible to prove my points, I'm using it wrong, because it itself says that it's for instruction and for, what's it called?
Reproof and correction.
Yeah. And so if it agrees with me, then I'm doing it wrong, or I'm lying or something. What can I tell him to shut him up?
What I'd say to him is I'd say thank you. He's giving you a lot to think about. That's what I'd recommend you say. Uh-huh. And then think about it, because it sounds like he's got a good head on his shoulders. But here's what I would tell you. One of my great discoveries after preaching the Bible for 24 years as a pastor and studying it all my life, and Greg, get ready, because I know you're not going to like this, but here's what I think the Bible is. The Bible is a book full of amazing and important arguments.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to argue with you on that.
Well, that's good. That means That means we're working in the biblical tradition. But think about it. David, remember the story of David? David kills Goliath and kills a whole bunch of other people. And he thinks he's doing the right thing. And then he wants to build a temple. And God says, nah, you can't build a temple because you're a man of bloodshed. So there's an argument in the Bible about, is it good? Is violence okay? Or is violence not okay? You even see it with Jesus and his disciples. The disciples want to call down fire on somebody, and he says, you don't know what spirit you're of. So one of the things that really helped me, because I grew up in a background very much like Twin Hills, you know, not a mega church, it was a very small church, but it is when I understood the Bible has really worthwhile and important arguments, and arguments make you think. You have to decide, whose side are you on? What do you go with here? So that might be worth talking today about.
Wow. Many thanks to the lovely Brian McLaren, who was a real sport and showed us what long suffering looks like. We love you, Brian. Read his book, Do I Stay Christian, and all his other well-reviewed 5-star books. Listen to his podcast, Learning How to See, and check him out at brianmclaren.net. I'm Holly Laurent, playing Hallie Labonte, and Gray Haas was played by Greg Hess. Follow us and Mega the Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And if you really want to get out of hell free card, support us on Patreon. The link is in the show notes.